Good morning, everyone. This reading, along with the reading that comes every year about not casting pearls before swine, has often been a challenging reading for me. I finally got to the place where the not casting pearls before swine I could see as really being a very loving act. So I was able to move through that a couple of years ago. And this reading, while for a while, from an intellectual place, I've thought I've understood it, it rubs me the wrong way, sort of, or it did. I think the words, it must just be something about the words. There's a story that I just read recently because I was going over some of Swamiji's discipleship notes. And there's a story there where Master's talking about what it takes in the discipleship notes, what he's talking about, the necessities on the spiritual path. And he lists 11 of them, which I'm not going to go into, at least not right now. But in the midst of that, Master says, it takes such will to be on this path. And he says, look, there's a lot of mice and rats running around in the canyon here, but they're not attaining self-realization. And I've read that probably 10 times, but it does the same thing to me. Like, I don't want to be reading about mice and rats, I guess. There's just something about it. So last night, I sat in my meditation place at my altar, and I said to the masters, can you help me love this reading? Can you frame it for me in such a way that my heart can open to it? Not just that I understand it with my mind, because I can't bring to these people tomorrow what I want to bring if I try and be too intellectual. It's not who I am. I'm a bhakti yogi. So find some way to bring it through my heart. And I left it there. And I read a few other things, and I meditated. And then I had the desire to pick up a book that I've been reading, a really superb book that was given to me by a friend about a week and a half ago called The Art of Racing in the Rain. And I've watched that book for years. It's been out for a long time, long enough that she had given me a paperback copy, but I avoided reading it for years because the whole idea sounded silly to me. This dog is narrating a story, and I'm thinking, everybody's so into dogs these days. And, I mean, I love dogs, but people are really into their dogs these days. So I thought, I'm not going to read this book. But the friend who gave it to me is somebody whose not only opinion and judgment I value, but we've shared books for many, many years, and it always works for me. So I picked up the book, and I don't know how many of you have read it, but it's a book that is, in fact, narrated by the dog. And the dog starts out by saying that he's not really happy about being a dog anymore, but he's read a lot and heard a lot. But he watches television a lot, this dog. And he knows that if you do dog really well, you come back next time as a human being. So he is living this whole life with the thought that he's going to get to come back as a human being, because there are so many things that he can't do as a dog, not the least of which is that he can't speak. And he makes a very big point about the fact that all he has are gestures, and gestures can only go so far. Well, the thing about the dog is that the dog in the book, you very quickly realize, is the guru. And he's extraordinarily wise. And his master is just essentially a good man. We never know if he's quite as wise, but the dog is very wise. And the whole book is told around race car racing, race car racing. And in that book, if anybody were here who knew about racing, it's all based on true stories of particular races that have happened, the drivers, the cars that were being raced over a span of many, many years. And the dog and Denny, the master, very often when they want to relax, they watch old races over and over and over. Well, the thing about this book is that it is about the essence of the spiritual path, told in the midst of this extraordinary love between the dog and his master. It's an amazing book. And the book is all about exactly what this reading is about. It's about courage. It's about determination. It's about attunement. It's about something that David read when he was reading The Spiritual Quality of the Week, which I had not read before, so let me just see if I can pull it back up. But basically, when we're deeply attuned, in our case, of course, with the divine, nothing can go wrong. It's impossible. And they bring this to the art of racing. And this man happens to be particularly good in the rain. But he knows that as long as he becomes one with his car, not only will he never have an accident, he can't have an accident, but as long as he stays deeply attuned and at one, he will never be where the accident is going to happen. So no matter what happens in his life, if he gets caught, if he gets hit by a car on the raceway, or there's, of course, a parallel story going on about life, about relationships. If anything happens in those relationships, never, ever does this man blame anybody for anything. He understands that he was out of tune and he was someplace that he didn't belong being. It is a beautiful story told by a bhakti yogi about our reading. Isn't that just dear? I mean, I never, the night before a Sunday service, never would I sit down and read a book of fiction. I just wouldn't. I'm meditating, I'm reading spiritual readings, but somehow, and I fought with myself a little bit, but then I read the last 75 or 80 pages of that book, and it opened this whole reading up to me. I'll just share one story with you from the book, because it's cute. The man in the book is in trouble, and he's in trouble with the law, but he didn't do anything wrong. And his lawyers and everybody else are trying to convince him that he should just give the people who are basically suing him what they want, sign the papers. You've spent a fortune. You've devoted hours and months now and a year of your life. Just, you know you didn't do anything wrong. Sign the paper. And the dog's watching this between the lawyers and the business people and Denny. And Denny picks up his pen, and the dog, who just for a little dramatic flair has just been hit by a car and has a fractured pelvis, leaps up on the table, grabs the papers in his mouth, and goes running around the house. And they're chasing him around, and they're saying, "You come here right now." And the dog's saying, "This is not dharmic. You cannot do what they want when you know that where you are and what you've done is right. Live in terms of what is right. If you do this, everybody will believe that they can get away with lying and cheating and stealing. You cannot do this." And they're running around the house. The owner's screaming at the dog, "You stop this minute." He never screams at him, but the dog won't stop. And then he leaps and dives out the window. And when he get outside, the lawyer and the man, and they're there and saying, "He leapt out that window," like they can't believe it. But Denny's still saying, "Enzo, you stop right where you are." And Enzo says, "I cannot let this happen." He calls him King Karma. He says, "Because King Karma will come and nothing good will come of this." So he said, "What do I have left? what does a dog have left? And he said, then I knew I had to lift my leg. The dog is really devoted to doing what is right. This is what this reading is about. It's about Jesus, who you can imagine was saying this. Think not that I have come to bring peace. He wasn't saying this in any nice way. I have come to bring a sword. And he goes on with the whole reading. When I hear him, it's very powerful. But then I thought, what is he talking about? He's talking about unswerving courage, unswerving dedication to the path. He's talking about everything that was in this book. And what does the sword really represent? The sword represents our willingness to go to battle. It represents that fine, sharp edge of discrimination that we need on the path. Jesus is coming and saying to everybody, it's not, he doesn't want to turn a daughter against her mother or a son against the father. That's not what he wants to do. He speaks many times about honoring your mother and your father. What he wants to do is show us about devotion, about courage, about dedication, about discrimination, about all of the things that we need to be clear on our path. And it's as it says in the reading, ultimately, it's our own ego. That's what we hold as the nearest of the near and the dearest of the dear, are all the things that the ego's attached to. I know many times when I'm up here, I refer to this scene in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna and Arjuna are on the battlefield before the battle has taken place. But you can't help but think of it again, but in a slightly different way than we often speak of it. Because Krishna says to Arjuna, and remember, Paramahansa Yogananda tells us he was Arjuna in a past life. That was the soul, the spirit of Yogananda was Arjuna. And Krishna says to Arjuna, you have to fight this fight. This is why you were born this time. This was his, but for this moment were ye born. This very battle. Krishna says, you can't not fight this battle. It is what your life is about. And Paramahansa Yogananda later told us that it was in that life that he became free. It was the very fighting of the battle that he was trying desperately, as you remember, to get away from. Interestingly, just in terms of this reading, a battle where it was about family, just like Jesus couched this teaching in and around family. Remember? They were his cousin brothers in India, like brothers to him, and he had to kill them. So he had to choose God, not over family, but to really expand his consciousness to the degree that there was love for everybody, even those people that he had to fight. But it didn't mean that he could leave the battle. He couldn't leave the battle. And then all of the other qualities that really represent our ego. It's exactly what's going on in this reading. Now, it's not easy. Going to battle is not easy. That's why the power in this reading. Swami Kriyananda says the spiritual path is not for what he calls armchair devotees. It just says it so perfectly, doesn't it? You just imagine somebody sitting back comfortably in an armchair. That's not who's going to make it on the path. The path is really hard. We need to be spiritual warriors. We need to be willing to go to battle. And we need to see where those battles are in our life. And every time we say no, every time we withdraw, then we're choosing to be separate from God. And every time we say, okay, I'm going to fight. We're choosing to be one with God. What does that look like in our own life? Because it doesn't look like we're not walking around carrying swords. We're not actually doing battle outwardly. But it looks like every time we choose negativity, every time we choose to be in a bad mood and just let ourselves go there. Sharmila, do you need any help? Okay. Is Padmini enough, or do you want some men? Okay. Okay. All right. Sorry. Let me just get back where I was. I was just watching this other scenario unfold before me. I was saying, what does it look like in our life? And I wanted to make this point because in our lives, it's subtle. In our lives, you know, our lives are not big, dramatic lives like these, like Jesus was. There probably are not, maybe none of us in this room who 2014 years from now, you know, millions of people are going to be remembering our name. Most of us are probably not really going to write 130 pieces of music or hundreds of books. We're not going to be commissioned by Babaji himself to go to other countries where we don't speak the language and make those kind of changes. That's not what's happening for us. What's happening for us is much more at the level of, as I was starting to say before, allowing ourselves to be a little negative. Allowing ourselves to get into a mood because the situation's a little difficult, and claim the mood, to be a little irritable, to speak judgmentally about somebody. All the things that we do instead of collecting ourselves and saying, absolutely not. I will not carry that negative thought about somebody. I'm not going to sit here and be in a bad mood and affect people around me. No, I will be a spiritual warrior, and I will raise the energy up. That's what it looks like for us. It looks like all the time changing our, what is it, the victory looks like having a raised consciousness, being even-minded, being devoted to the path, bringing everything we can bring. Paramahansa Yogananda says the only reason people fail on the path is because they get lazy. We all get lazy. We let ourselves off a hook. You know, I've had an interesting experience going on in my life for a little bit that I've spoken to some of you about. I got into a little bit of trouble with somebody in our community, not right in our community, but the community at large. And I felt like I was being attacked in certain ways. And I mean, the truth is that I was. I really was. And I held on to that for a while. And I was, in my mind, making the argument. You know how you create the whole argument. And I was contemplating confronting the person. Now, fortunately, I had first the wisdom by God's grace to know that my ego was way too involved to make any move. That was the first thing. So like, breathe, stop. But even as I was stopping, I was creating the argument, and I fell into the trap of wanting to be right. And I made the argument such that, and I presented it to a few people, and everybody said, you're absolutely right. Everybody encouraged me. And all of a sudden, it came to me, it didn't feel good to be right. When I said something to Barry, my partner, who many of you know is a psychologist, he said to me, yeah, you know, there are a couple of his friends or people say in therapy, would you rather be right or would you rather get somewhere? And I thought, that's true on the spiritual path as well. I could be right, I could present my case, and people would say, boy, you're really, that person's not treating you well. But where was that going to get me? What was the point of that? And fortunately, I could come out of it and say, what's trying to happen here? Why is this happening in my life. Why did it come to me? Not what circumstances look like, because there are so many traps like that. That's why in the reading, one of the other traps, familial warmth, being lulled into doing things we've always done, doing them the way we've always done them, winning arguments. There's no joy in that anymore when you're on the spiritual path. There's no joy. Yes, it's hard. The spiritual path is hard. But what else would we do with our lives? Every person in this room is here. Every person. Because Yogananda called us. Because he said to us, you actually have the ability in this life to get free, just like Krishna called him thousands of years ago. That's why we're here. What else would we do? You know, there's a friend of mine who was just diagnosed with a rather challenging cancer. Not that all cancers aren't challenging. I can't think of one I'd love to have. But this was one of those ones particularly where really stops you in your tracks, like, okay, this is going to be big guns. And she could very easily be in a position to be calling on me all the time. We are very, very dear friends. We've been told that we're in a soul band and that we've been traveling together for a long time. And it feels that way. Deep love, deep respect. But I said to her when this was all starting, I'm just not going to be able to be with you every minute, all the time, even maybe the way I would like to be. That's not what my life is. And she looked at me right in the middle of facing everything that she had to face. And she said to me, you've got to be kidding, Shanti. She said, you work for God. She said, you think I'd take you away from your work? I'm not calling you away from your boss. You know, such extraordinary clarity. And I think when she said it, it brought to me back to me, that's what we're all doing. Every single thing we do, how do we do that in our lives? How are we when we're being an usher or a greeter or when we're playing the chants or when we're serving on the bagel bar or when we're teaching a class or when we're taking a class? Because it doesn't really matter who's giving the class and who's taking it. We are all one. Your energy feeds whoever happens to be up here speaking. Hopefully that speaker's energy feeds you. How do we do those things, what look like the everyday things? That's where our spiritual battles will be lost or won. Making choices to bring ourselves fully, joyfully, with great energy. That's why these necessities that Master taught, and he said, Swami said in the notes on discipleship, he said, this is not a complete list, but this pretty much covers it. There's 11 of them. I won't be able to pull them up right now, but of course, it starts with devotion, and there's will in there, and attunement to the guru, and nishkam karma, you know, doing everything we do without wondering what's going to come back to us, and the list goes on. But the point that Swami makes when he presents that list is that any one of them doesn't get us anywhere. Every single one of them is completely and totally dependent on all of the others. They're all at the center of our path. So when we bring our will to something, and they separated will and willingness, when we are practicing the presence of God, when we're developing devotion, anything we do in life, we do as an act of love for God, then we are winning this spiritual battle. You remember when one of the women up at Ananda was, I don't know if it was the woman who had AIDS or somebody who had cancer, but she was being offered another treatment. And she said to Swamiji, what should I do? She was tired. And Swamiji said to her, as long as you think you can make spiritual progress, take the next treatment. As long as we're in a position to grow spiritually, because we've been called here by Master, and we've been told we can be free. What did Master say to us The time for knowing God is now. I said to that friend of mine, who's dealing magnificently with such extraordinary strength and wisdom, she's a deeply devoted, deeply and seriously on a spiritual path. I said to her, you know, all this does is hold it right up in front of you, what every one of us knows and what every one of us has to be practicing. There's no time to waste. Right now, think of this. Have you always wanted to be meditating a little more? Do it. Have you wanted to be nicer to people? Do it. Have you wanted to start teaching some spiritual class? Do it. Do you want to come up here and sing in the choir? Do it. Whatever it is, just start doing it. That's what this life is about. I want to end by reading to you this lovely story. This is the first story that popped into my mind when I read this reading. It's the chapter on the levitating saint, an autobiography of a yogi who was Bhadri Mahashaya. You may remember, he was a very important teacher in Yogananda's childhood days until he moved away. But he was a wonderful teacher, and he had a lot of disciples, and he lived very, very simply. In fact, there's a comment here how people would come and just put coins in his shoes, which is, of course, a custom in India, just bowing at the feet of the guru. And he lived very simply, just on whatever was given to him. And one of his disciples said to him, "Master, you are wonderful." A student taking his leave gazed ardently at the patriarchal sage. "You have renounced riches and comforts to seek God and teach us wisdom." It was well known that Bhadri Mahashaya had forsaken great family wealth in his early childhood when single-mindedly he had entered the yogic path. "You are reversing the case." The saint's face held a mild rebuke. "I have left a few paltry rupees, a few petty pleasures, for a cosmic empire of endless bliss. How then have I denied myself anything? I know the joy of sharing the treasure. Is that a sacrifice?" And then he finishes by saying, "The short-sighted worldly folk are verily the real renunciates. They relinquish an unparalleled divine possession for a poor handful of earthly toys." This is what we're after. We're after knowing where real value is in this life at all time. It's not in being right. It's not in what we own. It's not in having the next many evenings with your family who's telling you how wonderful you are. It's not in avoiding what Master calls these teachings. He calls them social inconveniences. It's in really dedicating our lives right now from this moment forward and again and again and again, because I know I'm speaking to all other people that Master called, but to dedicating our lives to being spiritual warriors.